My headache won't go away.
I get blurry vision.
My balance is awful.
I'm exhausted.
We can all get these symptoms from time to time. But if you or a loved one notice you're getting a combination of them regularly, don't ignore it. They could be signs of a brain tumour.
My headache won't go away.
I get blurry vision.
My balance is awful.
I'm exhausted.
To learn more about the common signs of a brain tumour, search Better Safe Than Tumour.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Brain Tumours, the podcast where we'll be talking to people who've been affected by a brain tumour diagnosis, either their own diagnosis or the diagnosis of a loved one. We'll also be sharing news and updates from the Brain Tumour Charity about what we're doing to halve the harm and double survival.
Hi everyone and welcome back to the Brain Tumour Charity podcast. In this spotlight episode, we speak to a researcher about their work into looking into how we treat glioblastomas. What more can be done to help patients who have a diagnosis? I found this episode really insightful, and I hope you do too. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to the Brain Tumour Charity direct, or visit thebraintumourcharity.org for further information. Do you want to talk about yourself and your role as a researcher?
Sure, yeah. My name is Angel Alvarez. I'm a postdoctoral fellow in Joanna Joyce's lab. I joined the lab in 2019, and since then I've been focusing on understanding the biology of the tumor immune microenvironment in brain cancer. So this is all the cells that form part of the tumor bed that sit within the tumor, but are not cancer cells. So immune cells, fibroblasts, vessels, and other cells. So our work is focusing on understanding the biology of this component to try to find new ways to manipulate it for therapy.
And how does the research that's being funded by the Brain Tumour Charity help brain tumour patients specifically?
So yeah, that's a very important question. So the project that I got funded by the Future Leader Program from the charity focuses on glioblastomas. Glioblastomas are primary brain cancers. And the challenge with these tumors is, first of all, that there is high mortality. They affect a lot of people. It's estimated that around 15,000 new patients will be diagnosed per year in Europe and the US. And the treatment, unluckily, it invariably fails. So the median overall survival is around 15 months, and therapy never eradicates or very rarely eradicates completely the disease. And there are many reasons for this. So first of all, of course, the location of the tumors is very challenging. So even when the surgeon removes the tumor, these tumors tend to be infiltrative. So it's very, very difficult that the surgeon will be able to remove all malignant cells. There is a second challenge, which is that these tumors are extremely heterogeneous, which means that different tumors from different people will behave differently and respond differently to therapy. But even more, within the same tumor, we can find different regions in the tumors or different cells. So these units that will compose the tumor that are also different, which makes it extremely challenging to only have one therapy that will kill all the different cancer cells. And then the last challenge associated to the treatment of glioblastoma tumors is that the tumor microenvironment, and specifically the immune microenvironment, so all immune cells that are part of the tumor bed, it's immunosuppressive, which means that it's contributing to tumor growth, to tumor progression, and to resistance to therapy. So there are several challenges that we need to tackle if we want to find new therapies for glioblastomas, and this is what I wanted to do in the project that I proposed to the Brain Charity. So what my project is trying to do is to target an innate immunity checkpoint to reprogram the way in which cancer cells talk with the immune microenvironment, with immune cells in the microenvironment of these cancers. And the idea here is that by reprogramming this communication, we will prevent cancer cells from hiding from the immune system. Because what happens now is that cancer cells are smart enough to cheat the immune system and to hijack it for their benefit. So they are basically saying, look, I'm not the bad guy, I'm the good guy, so don't attack me, help me grow. So what we want to do by targeting this innate immunity checkpoint is to actually unhide, let's say, cancer cells from the immune system, to actually make tumor cells tell the immune system, look, I'm the bad guy, you should be attacking me.
And this research is over a number of years, and where are you in... Are you still in the planning phase? Whereabouts are you in terms of the research and development of the program?
Yeah, so this research has started now almost 5 years ago, and the project that that was funded by the charity, it's actually an extension of the project. So based on some very promising preliminary data that we got, we decided that we wanted to expand it further and evaluate this strategy of targeting this innate immunity checkpoint in combination with other immunotherapies and with other standard of care modalities. So we started this 1 year ago now, so this extension of the project, but we already have some results that really indicate that targeting this innate immunity checkpoint can be a valid way to treat glioblastoma tumors. This, of course, needs to be taken with a pinch of salt, because we are doing this in preclinical mouse models of glioblastoma. And so far, what we have seen is that actually targeting this pathway is leading to extended survival in these models. The tumors grow slower. So it's very, very promising, but we need to be very, very cautious, because we know there are many examples in other cancers, in glioblastoma as well, in which very promising results in preclinical mouse models do not necessarily translate into a clinical benefit. So, of course, we would like to get there. And that's the idea. And that's why we started this project, because our ultimate goal was to improve the therapeutic options for glioblastoma patients. But we need to take it step by step and be cautious. So now we're at a point in which we know that this can be a valid approach. We are trying to understand better what are the mechanisms by which this is happening. So why are cancer cells growing slower? Why are these preclinical mouse models surviving longer when we treat them and when we target this pathway that I mentioned before? So I think it's exciting. We're at a very exciting point, but we also need to be realistic and know that probably from now to translation, there is still a good 5-10 years.
And you said there that the research you're doing sits alongside other treatment models that are already being used. So is the goal for the research that you're doing not to find necessarily one single cure, but something that sits alongside the existing models of treatment, such as radiotherapy, chemotherapy, to really enhance the standard of care?
So that's one of the things that we actually wanted to evaluate in this project. Of course, if we would just be able to cure glioblastomas by targeting this pathway, that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. But this is extremely unlikely. And what we see in our preclinical mouse models is not complete remission. What we see is extended survival and reduced tumor growth. So this is telling us that we really need to combine this with other therapies, as you were asking. And that's exactly what we are evaluating. We're evaluating combination of targeting this pathway of this protein in specifically. It's called ADAR1. I can give you more details later. And we're combining this with radiotherapy, and we are combining it with other immunotherapies, immune checkpoint blockade, and other drugs that can somehow also reprogram the immune microenvironment. So the idea here is to really engage the immune system to fight these tumors, so that we can combine therapies that are targeted against cancer cells alone with a therapy that is going to reprogram the immune system to fight also cancer cells. So in this way, we'll be having this two-hit approach, let's say, in which we are triggering mechanisms that will lead to cancer cell death from the cancer cells themselves. That's what radiotherapy, for example, does, or chemotherapy. But at the same time, our aim is to also be able to engage the immune system to attack these cancer cells, so we can have both simultaneously, and hopefully we can have more durable responses.
When we talk about brain tumors, we know that they can affect people very differently. How does that affect your research in terms of, do you find any mutations in the tumor types that then means that you have to adapt your methodology or the way you're doing the research?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because as I was mentioning before, glioblastomas are very, very heterogeneous, and one of the sources of heterogeneity, it's mutations, as you're indicating. And something that is very interesting and that we found in our research is that when we target ADAR1, when we are targeting this innate immunity checkpoint, and we have done this, for example, in different glioblastoma cell lines coming from different patients with different mutations, this treatment is effective in all of them equivalently, because we are targeting a mechanism that is present in all cancer cells, regardless of the genetic makeup, regardless of the transcriptional subtype to which they belong, regardless of many other components of this huge heterogeneity that we mentioned before. And that's why we think that that can be a very valid approach to, in the future, develop new therapies, because we believe it will help us overcome this huge heterogeneity. Because so far in our hands, also in mouse models, we have generated four different preclinical mouse models of glioblastoma, also recapitulating different subtypes and tumors with different mutations. And in all of them, we have found exactly the same results. So we see this extended survival, which is indicating that by targeting either one, we can really, I cannot say completely overcome the heterogeneity of the disease, but at least this is providing a good starting point to find a therapy that in principle should be effective regardless of the genetic and transcriptional heterogeneity.
And how are you involving people with lived experience of brain tumors involved in your research? So we previously spoke to a researcher who's, they were looking at the kind of the aftercare and the way that we support people once they have a diagnosis. How are you involving people in the research that you do and making sure that they're taken with you on that journey?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I'm not very close to patient care. So what I'm trying to do is just to disseminate what we do, how we do it, the reason why we do it, and what we're finding. So I'm trying to make our research accessible to people, to patients, of course, but also to people involved in patient care. So for example, nurses, doctors, people in charities like yourself, for instance. So I'm always very open to have open interviews, to give talks, to give seminars, to reply to questions from patients and from families from the scientific perspective, of course, because I'm not a doctor. I'm not, as I said before, involved in clinical care. So there isn't much I can really contribute to in that field. But what I can do is to really ensure patients that we are trying our best to try to find new treatments and to help them understand what we're doing and where we think this can be potentially leading to new therapeutic approaches for them. But also I think it's important to make them understand that these things take time. So because sometimes when you have this kind of research findings, you see in the media, for example, that they're frequently exaggerated. So they present them as if you have already found a cure against the disease. And I think that's extremely dangerous. So something that I also try to do when I participate in these dissemination activities is to be very realistic about what we do. So it's like, this is research. We are now in the preclinical stage. We have these results, which are extremely promising, I believe, and which can potentially lead to new treatments. But it's important to understand that this may take another 5, 10, 15 years in the best case scenario, and it is also important to understand that many times the results that we have in preclinical models do not translate to patients. So my involvement has been mostly in terms of dissemination and making sure that our work is reaching the lay public.
And if people do have any questions of how they can get involved or they want to learn more about the research that you're doing, how can they find out about you and the team behind the research?
So they can reach out. So there is the Joyce Lab webpage. There is contact information there. I'm always happy to take and reply to emails. I'm also reachable by Twitter and in LinkedIn. And we're also organizing with the charity now some activities, for example, a Q&A session, which should be published soon, in which the idea is that people can post their questions and I will try to answer them. And sometimes we also organize meetup sessions with patients and people who are interested with exactly the same idea, to just give them the opportunity to ask whatever they are curious about, and for us to also try to provide them with answers. But again, from a scientist perspective, not from a medical doctor perspective.
Mm-hmm. And it's given that idea that, yes, we are working towards a solution or a way of working differently, but it's going to take time. And I think that's so important, because I know that from my perspective of having a brain tumor, like, you can often be told things about your treatment and expect it's going to just make everything better, and it's, that doesn't necessarily, it helps you along the way a little bit and makes you feel better and stuff. And I guess when looking at glioblastomas and the impact they have on the quality of life and stuff, it's, the research that you're doing is so vital. So firstly, thank you on behalf of myself and everyone listening. And it's been amazing to chat to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's of course not only me, it's many, many people all over the world working on this. But I think it's really something important and something necessary and a big problem that we need to tackle, which unfortunately affects not only in this case glioblastoma patients, but many other cancer patients, which nowadays don't have a cure. So all I can say is that from our side, we are doing our best. We're working hard and we are trying to push as much as possible to move on with the research and to get results that will be someday hopefully translatable into a tangible benefit for patients.
Thank you. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Brain Tumor Charity Podcast. Whether you've been diagnosed with a brain tumor or a family member or friend has, the charity are here to help. Call 0808 800 0004, that's 0808 800 0004, or visit thebraintumorcharity.org for more information.
If you've enjoyed this episode, it would really help us if you could head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, and leave us a review, as it really helps podcasts like this to reach more people. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tamsin and I work in the individual giving team at the Brain Tumor Charity. Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you or a loved one have been diagnosed with a brain tumor and are worried about your finances, the Brain Tumor Charity's Benefits and Money Advice Clinic, run in partnership with the Citizens Advice, is here to help you. Our expert advisors can help you access the financial support you're entitled to, as well as give advice on how to make the most of your money. To make an appointment with our Benefits and Money Advice Clinic, visit our website at thebraintumorcharity.org/money or call our support team on 0808 800 0004.